A lot of young people here tonight. Are the restaurants closed or something? Anyways, a long, long time ago, I remember just coming to this center as a young monk. And it's an easy job being a young monk because you just sit next to Ajahn Brahm. You don't have to say anything. And then as years go by, you get to keep that role for quite a long time until you're a monk for quite some time, like over 10, 12, 15 years. And then Ajahn Brahm will start asking you to teach. So those days were really nice. These days, it's just a little bit uncomfortable, but you know, hopefully I'll get used to it. But then I was thinking, you know, it's like you've been a practitioner for so long, and you're sitting here and you want to share something with the audience here tonight, and also the people watching on YouTube. And then it's like just ideas just going through my mind. You know, what can I say? And it's kind of the interesting concept that just come to mind is when we're embarking on a practice like this, it's something that doesn't happen like quickly or instantly. It's something that happens over time. And Ajahn Brahm would always compare it to like when he was like trekking in the forest before he ordained. And that's one of these interesting facts about Ajahn Brahm. He was quite an adventurous person. He went here, he went there, he went to Thailand and all that kind of thing. And he went hiking. And one of his experiences was that he would go into the forest and he would go for a long walk. And by the end of the walk, his clothes would be drenched in water. They'll be just wet, soggy. And he didn't really know, like all of a sudden, like one moment he was dry and the next moment he was wet. But he didn't actually know when he started to become, like his clothes started to become wet, but it just happened. And I think in the same way, when you're sort of like embarking on this like spiritual practice or these ideas of Buddhism, these things don't really happen straight away. But when you give it time, these things will start to mature and you'll start to see some sort of results. And that's sort of, I was thinking earlier is like, okay, I've been a monk for a long time, so I've got something to share. and so we moved into a new place in Rolly Stone, and obviously there's a few challenges that arise, and we just cope with it whichever way we can. And I was thinking about, you know, the way human beings, how we cope with things, is something that is learnt from like a young age, or learnt from a spiritual practice, or learnt from, you know, some time ago. How you react in this moment is a reaction that wasn't learnt yesterday or 2 weeks ago. It's a reaction which you've learnt over time. The way you deal with problems, how you speak to people, the way you look at life. And what came to mind was as monks, one of our focuses in life is the meditation practice. Just being able to sit down and just calm our minds. You know, you just did it for half an hour, but we've been doing it for many years. You know, sometimes we are really diligent and we meditate a lot. Sometimes we're not. We get caught up in whatever reasons we get caught up in. But I think, like just thinking about the meditation earlier, when we're meditating, we don't try to think about anything. We don't solve the problems of the world. We don't try to develop like some sort of insight. We're just sitting quietly. Well, that's what we aim to do. If you sit quietly long enough, then the mind will start to, in a sense, become in sync with the room. If you think about this room's not talking. If you think about this room, it's very quiet. It's very still. So in a sense, when we're meditating, our minds can become one with this moment. And no, it's like the meditation doesn't prepare you for how you're going to react to the builder or how you're going to solve this problem. It doesn't do that. It just brings the mind to a place of quietness. And in that quietness, or whatever's happening, you can say there's like a maturity of the mind that starts to grow. And this maturity of the mind is something that you take with you into your daily life. It's like, you know, how you react to the people around you. The meditation influences that to a certain extent. And also, but also if you think about the, you know, the path of practice, there's also like the ideas of being kind and being generous. And that also has an effect on how you relate to people that you come across in life. And yeah, and you know, it's like I was just listening to one of Ajahn Brahm's talks, and he was talking about just getting involved with some builders, and the builder came up to him and started to say all these nasty things, but because of his practice for a long time, he reacted out of like calm and loving kindness towards his builder. And in a way, this kind of reaction, and this, in a way, when the builder received this kind of attitude from Ajahn Brahm, he was in like a little bit of a shock. He didn't know how to react. Because if somebody reacted to you in this kind of manner, then you would probably try to get angry back at them and then end up having a big fight. But because Ajahn Brahm was calm, he was calm. The builder became calm. And they were able to, you know, sort things out. And yeah, it's like, and so yeah, is you're coming here, you know, to learn a little bit about how we can improve our minds. There's many aspects, you know, to how the Buddha taught, and there's reasons why we're interested in such a teaching. And you know, the Buddha, he talked about faith, is, you know, this interest in the teachings. I mean, it's like just looking at the people in the crowd right now, it's like what's your religious inclination, you know, why are you here, what are you interested in? And a part of the practice is to be able to develop some sort of faith into like a religion or into it, like a teaching. And this faith is sort of helps us continue on the path of the practice. Sometimes we come in and we're interested, you know, it sounds really nice if we can live like this for the rest of our lives. If everybody in the world does the same thing, the world will be a very peaceful place. And these are like nice ideas that we can come across, but it's like, how committed are we to prolong this kind of practice of way of life? So like faith, or like Ajahn Brahmali would like to put it, is like confidence in the teachings. Just like these simple things that if you're mindful of and you can reflect how they affect your daily life, like being a more kind person, being a more generous person, you know, how does that affect your life? How does that make you feel? How does it make other people feel? And then you think about life in this kind of way, and you start to think, hey, you know, this Buddhism, there might be some sort of truth to it. And that sort of like builds up an interest, a sense of confidence in the teachings, which gives you that faith to like continue on. And it's like in life, you know, we get lost on the way, and we lose all sense of like being virtuous. We lose our connection with like the spiritual practice of Buddhism. And that's fine, that's normal, you know, that happens to people, that happens to monks. But this reminder, this like our minds, you know, we have this ability to like remember things, to reflect, to think about life, which is like something unique to human beings. We may walk off the path, but then there's something that draws us back to like these simple teachings of the Buddha, just being kind and caring to one another, to develop peace, to let go. These kinds of things, they bring us back and just like refocuses the mind. And it's kind of nice, it's true, because sometimes I was like getting caught up with this like building project. It's like we were basically working like builders for a year. And every once in a while we'll get to listen to a Dhamma talk. And that's sort of like, it's like, geez, you know, it's like crikey, I've been just thinking about power tools, drills and tiles for the last 10 months. And your mind forgets about it, to be honest, even though you're wearing the brown robe. Your mind's just focused on something different. But then every once in a while, you know, we'll play a Dhamma talk or listen to a message that we've heard so many times before. But for some reason, it makes sense. There's like a deeper connection there. It's actually quite inspiring just to hear teachings like, you know, you know, you'll suffer less in this world if you can learn how to accept the world for what it is. You know, things like that. Or it's how you use your perceptions in life which generate happiness or sadness. Just these things that you haven't heard in a while, after hearing them, they make some sort of sense. There's a connection there. So this, you know, this faith, this confidence, it keeps us, in a sense, having this kind of practice in our hearts for a long, long time. It's like, I see many Buddhists here, and they've been Buddhists for a long time, you know? And then it's like the Buddha talked about like the energies of the mind. It's like I'm trying to talk about the five spiritual faculties that to enlightenment or for the practice. So the first one is faith. The second one is energy. The third one is mindfulness. The fourth one is concentration or samadhi. And the fifth one is wisdom. So the second one is like the energy of the mind that arises like from living a good life. It's like, I remember like sometimes if you flick through the earlier photos of Ajahn Brahm, if you look into his eyes, they're like on high beam. He's like looking right through you or something like that. And he was a monk who has a super, 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 super bright mind. And the brightness of the mind or the energy of the mind always equates to like happiness. or clarity, or just being able to live in the moment. And that comes from basically just living a guilt-free, remorseless-free kind of life, doing things which is beneficial to yourself and to other people. Just seeing examples in this world is like during COVID in Sydney, the students from overseas, there wasn't enough food for them to eat. So just spontaneously, restaurant owners would cook food and just give it to them. Just these simple acts of kindness that may seem simple to a certain extent. These are the little things that you can do to add value to your life. You know, we don't need to aim for those epic acts of kindness, like giving thousands of dollars to one cause, or selling your house and giving it to some sort of charity. You don't need to do anything huge like that, but it's all those little things that you can do every day. You know, if you see somebody, it's like we get a lot of elderly people that it's always nice to see, like we get these elderly people that come visit us and feed us every day. And sometimes they can't, like they find it hard to walk from their car, and they bring plate loads of food. And it's always nice to just see like the Anagarikas or the lay people staying with us. You don't need to instruct them or tell them to do anything. They just go and do it and help people out. So like in a sense, like when you're doing this practice, your way of thinking sort of changes. And instead of thinking about other things, you look out for opportunities to help. And now it's sort of like Ajahn Brahm's getting old. See, we help Ajahn Brahm. We wash his clothes. Yeah, he's an old man, he should be able to do that. But we still do it. And I'm pretty sure if he gets really old and sick, we don't mind looking after him. Yeah. clean him, give him his breakfast. Yeah, I just sort of noticed that with the people that you care for a lot, like, say, like your teacher, you would do anything for them when they get sick. But then, like, an interesting fact, even in the time of the Buddha, because there was this one monk who was really sick, but he didn't have a good reputation, the monks didn't like him. So when he got sick, the monks just left him alone. And the Buddha found out about it, and the Buddha admonished the monks. He said, you shouldn't have any preferences when it comes to looking after a sick monk. You should look after all the monks the same way. So yeah, it does happen. It is true, it does happen. It's like, I've seen that happen in monasteries as well. So, but yeah, it gets to a point, you know, when you have somebody that you really respect and care for, you would do anything for them to help them out. It's just a great way of showing your appreciation to your teacher or to somebody you care. It's like when, it was like Ajahn Chah, this Ajahn Brahm's teacher, and I got all these little stories that I've heard about him, and they're kind of random at the moment, but he was dying. He couldn't talk. He couldn't move. He had a couple of brain operations, but it didn't work out. But he was conscious, and he had his way of communicating. And at the time, even though he wasn't teaching, he could understand. And there was, I'm pretty sure that this great famous teacher, there was a lot of fuss about it. People were worried. They didn't want him to die. But they also knew in their own hearts he's suffering physically, just being in that state. So it's probably a good idea to let him go. But a lot of people didn't want that to happen. So the monks got together, came up with a decision, and they went to see Ajahn Chah. And basically the whole conversation was, Ajahn, can you please stay alive so people can continue to make merit or make some good karma when you're still here? And just being, you know, wise, compassionate, understanding, like monk, he agreed to stay alive. So the doctors, the nurses, and the monks did whatever they could to keep him alive. He was basically like paralyzed or couldn't speak. And I don't know how they were feeding him, maybe through a tube, but he stayed alive for like 10 years after that. And they got to, so you can imagine, and they got like, what is it? Like during this time, he would just go into these deep states of meditation and his breathing would completely stop. And what is it? I don't know if the monks freaked out. I don't think they freaked out because they understood the way that the mind and meditation works. But the nurses, they freaked out. And they didn't want Ajahn Chah to die on their watch because that would have been massive, massive bad karma. So the monk said, oh, everything's okay, don't worry. And the doctors, they just wanted to make sure. So what they did was they took his blood to check it. And they checked it, and all the oxygen, like the oxygen level in the blood was just like of a normal person, but he stopped breathing. And the monks were like, oh yeah, he's just having a good time. He's just having a good time. And yeah, so like he's just being there, just giving the opportunity to just allow people to look after him. It was like you hear, I'm sure the monks, the lay people, who looked after him, if they reflect on that memory, I think that would give them a lot of happiness. It's like, you know, in my lifetime, I got to look after somebody like this. There is some sense of closure there. And even like, it's like, okay, maybe you don't have an Ajahn Brahm in your life, but you have your parents. You have your parents, you have your good friends. You know, somebody that you can just, what is it? Somebody that you can just give 100% to. Instead of thinking about, not 100%, but, you know, just give a lot to. Instead of just focusing on what we want and how we want to improve ourselves or, you know, stuff like that. It's always nice, I think, to be able to just be selfless in this life. Yeah, it's kind of freeing to the mind. It makes you worry less, I think, because whatever you're doing, you're not doing it for personal gain. You're not doing it for a reputation. You're just doing it because you just want to be able to help other people or help a cause. And yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's like one of the monks that I'm living with. We could say like over the past 12 months, it's been an enormous way of giving by being able to just give up your personal preferences or what you want to do for the last 12 months. Just to get a place ready for monks to live in. It's like, you know, we're not like being asked to do it. We volunteered ourselves. You know, in the monastery, you only need to work a couple of hours a day. But we're doing like 6-7 hours a day, 5 days a week. So in a sense, it's like, because we're so used to something, but only working 2 hours a day, working 7 hours a day could be quite challenging for some of us. So you can see, it took a while for this other monk to get used to it. But then eventually he understood that, hey, you know, we need to put in this time, we need to put in this effort to be able to just to reach a goal and have a place to live in. And you can just sort of see like that selfless nature, that ability to give actually brought like a sense of being able to give something to the community, being able to build something for the future. And that would, you could see that that was giving him like some sense of happiness to be able to do that. So yeah, you know, just, you know, it's like I was just trying to say earlier, it's like that's like a way of just like bringing up this energy in the mind. It's like if you look at the other side of life, the low energy states, you know, what do they feel like? What's going on in your head? You know, when you get like a low energy state is like when you get into a big, massive argument with somebody that you care for. How does that feel? That's a low energy state. It doesn't feel too good, does it? Or when your favorite football team loses. Or when your favorite batsman gets out for a golden duck. How does that feel? Is that a low energy state? Or when your soup gets served to you cold. That's terrible. I need a microwave now. But yeah, these states is like, yeah, you can understand where you understand where I'm coming from. Like these, yeah, it's like, there's the lows and the highs in life. And just like the sign outside when you're walking in on the plaque, it basically says to cultivate goodness, to refrain from doing anything unwholesome, and to purify the mind. I think this is the path of all the Buddhas. That's what it said. It's very simple. Very simple. And if you think about life is kind of simple in a way. Even though we live in a very fast-paced life with all this technology and information and things to do, when we look at it, it's not too difficult. You wake up in the morning and you go to bed. You do a few things in between that make you feel good. They make you feel bad. You have a time, you meditate, and then you repeat. And these things actually shape your life. So it's sort of like when you start getting these low states of mind, low energy because you've been fighting a war with your family or fighting a war within yourselves, it never feels good. You sort of understand that this is not the path to walk on, because you're just walking on this path and you just continue walking on it and it just gets darker and darker. So instead, just do a U-turn. We human beings can do U-turns. We're smart, intelligent beings. We can change our lives. Just do a U-turn and just go in the other direction and just develop the wholesome states of mind. And find little things that you can do during the day. Like, heat up my soup. When you serve it, no, that's a bad joke. So the energy of the mind, you know, you feel good, like enjoying life in the right possible ways, keeping the five precepts and those kinds of things. And then it's just like you take that into like what's that mindfulness? Mindfulness is just this ability to just know, basically. It's like what I was saying before, it's like you're mindful of the situation that you're in. And then you learn, like whatever you learn from the meditation allows you to react in a certain way. Like if you develop calm states of mind when you meditate, and you come up with like something which is challenging because you've developed that calm in the past, then you can sort of solve that problem in a calm manner. So mindfulness is sort of like brings these, well, yeah, so many different interpretations, eh? Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But they all sound good. So mindfulness is just like mindfulness is like mindfulness along with the teachings. That's another idea that you learn in Buddhism, is like you can be mindful and just know what is happening now. Like you can know that I'm talking. You can know that your leg is sore. You can know that this is boring, or you can know that this is really good. You can know a lot of things, right? But then it's like the instructions that come with this knowing. It's interesting because you come here so many times, right? I've seen, and it's like you go throughout your everyday life. Same problems, but different day. Mindfulness is there, but the instructions that come along with mindfulness may not be there. And then you just come to the Dhammaloka Center, you listen to the monks, Ajahn Brahm will brainwash you, Ajahn Bhavali too, and now it's my turn to brainwash you as well. And then you go through your everyday life. But then all of a sudden, you come with the same problem. And then for some reason you react differently. I think like just watching the mind is like, sometimes the teachings will just arise within your mind at the right time. So then you're like, something goes wrong and you're finding fault with something, and the story of the two bad bricks come into your mind. If you know what I mean. And then the problem is not there. It's not there anymore, but it sort of softens the problem that you may have. Or the story that Ajahn Brahm talks about, the smart chicken farmer and the stupid chicken farmer. You may go through life, blah, blah, blah. Something may happen. A lot of the times, not a lot of the times, but your old self, maybe this stupid chicken farmer arrives. Maybe this stupid chicken farmer shows up. But then every once in a while, the smart one will. And they will just look at life in a different manner. Just picking out the positivity to just to be able to just able to let go of the situation more easily. So that's what mindfulness is. There's many aspects to the mindfulness. And just like when we're meditating, we're also being mindful, just being mindful of the moment. Mindful of whatever's happening now. And then it's always a nice practice, like when we're in the monasteries, when we get the chores, to just do the sweeping. These long paths in the Australian bush, you get a lot of the eucalypts drop their leaves. So it's a chore every morning to just go around and just sweep the paths. You just sweep the paths and you just do it mindfully, just being in the moment. Not thinking about what you're going to have for lunch, or not thinking about what you're going to do later on in the evening, but just being able to just use a simple like activity like sweeping to help your mind being in the present moment. And this is something that we can do throughout our life, like throughout our day. And you can imagine that it's like All the problem, like a lot of the problems that we have in our minds is caused by the mind just going into the future and just becoming anxious over something, or just going into the past and just reliving like a bad memory. Now these problems like happen either in the past or either in the future. But have you ever noticed how many problems you've had living in the present moment? I don't think there's many problems that can happen if you can just live in the here and live in the now. It's just like, you know what, it's like when you think about it, it's like when we talk about this idea of a training, idea of a practice, you can just break it down simply, even what we do in our meditation as a monk or how we live our lives is basically just to get our thoughts away from the future and the past and just being more in the moment. So the mindfulness practice, in a sense, you could call that, you wouldn't call it that, but it's like sort of meditation in life. Just doing things with a mind which is present in everything you do, like brushing your teeth, driving the car, you know, things like that. I remember when I was younger and I was having problems with my thinking and I was working in the kitchen, just chopping up carrots and stuff. I always made sure I served the soup hot. Anyways, just gotta see if you guys are listening. Anyways, it's like, I was just very comfy. Anyways, so just having troubles with my thoughts and I don't really know much about Buddhism, but this kind of practice of just bringing your mind back into the moment made sense to me. So every time my mind started to wander, I was always bringing back to what I was doing in the kitchen, whether it's like cutting carrots or just like cooking some meat or sautéing some pasta. Like these things, just like this active moving the mind away from distracting thoughts, I found it really, really helped. And it's sort of like a repeating exercise that you do. It's not something that, it's not like a problem that you're solving, X, Y, Z equals this. It's just something that you notice with your mindfulness, because you notice with your mindfulness, if you have enough mindfulness, you can see what's happening in your mind, and you can see that there's a problem. You can call it a problem or something which is not leading to, you know, wholesome states of mind. So then you're able to bring it back. And you can see, like, if you can take your mind away from such problems and be in the moment, when the mind's in the moment, in a sense, there's no problem there. That's why these, like, it's like if you talk about the deeper states of meditation, there's like pure states of being in the present moment. It's like now. Like prolonged. We may have like little glimpses of the present moment when we're meditating, but when we meditate, when we like develop that skill, the length of that mind being present grows larger and larger and larger. So that's like, oh, it's getting a bit too late. Maybe it should be like a to be continued talk. I can start my own eight. No. Okay, so I'll wrap it up quickly. So you got mindfulness, and then after the mindfulness is like the deep meditations, the concentration. So all these things, like one of the beautiful things about Buddhism is like these things happen naturally, but you got to start somewhere and put yourself in a situation where you can allow these things to arise. So when you have like the energy of the mind, like you're more happy in life, you're more content, you're more bubbly, you become mindful naturally. So you be aware of your situation around you, you can react accordingly. And then after that, when you start to like you have like meditation is after that, like so the mind becomes like quiet and still easily. It's just like peaceful and quiet. And then from that becomes like the, you know, the wisdom, the understanding of the world as it truly is. So you get the insights, and basically insight leads to like less suffering in life. The more you understand life through, you know, things don't last forever, things are suffering, things are impermanent, you tend to let it go because you don't want to get involved in it. It's like, why would I want to get involved in something which is never lasting? Why would I want to get involved in something which is going to cause me suffering? You know, those kinds of reflections is sort of like, you can imagine the Buddha. Well, this is maybe the reason, one of the reasons why he didn't want to get reborn is because he saw the suffering in life. And it's sort of like, if it's an insight, then it's kind of like an acknowledgement of what life is, and then making a choice from it. Can you imagine that? I don't know if it's true or not. Maybe you got to ask Sanjay Brahm. Maybe the Buddha did have a choice. I'm not sure. But anyways, not to be reborn or be reborn. Who knows? Anyways, just these one thing leads to another. And I was going to say something, but I forgot. Okay, I think I ended there. Yeah, it's getting late. Any questions? Okay. Pugs in USA. Dear Ajahn, what can I and other white people practicing Buddhism do to prevent anti-Asian violence in America and also help victims? Oh, okay. I have no idea. Just meditate and be kind. Yeah. What can I and I else? Okay. Yeah, I don't really know what to do in this kind of situation. What can I and other white people practicing Buddhism do to prevent anti-Asian violence in America and also help victims? I guess you can, depends on where you are in life and how much of an impact you have on society. Sometimes we can do a lot. Then if we can, then just try to do something in a moral and fair way. But if you're just, if you don't have that kind of reach in terms of influencing the people around you, but maybe just a small circle, then you just try your best to not be one of these, to think in ways of harmony and just kindness and peace, and just use that as your intention when it comes to dealing with these problems in life. Okay. Well, there's so many questions. Do I need to answer all of them? Okay, I guess so. Devin, how can I find the purpose of my life? Oh. It's an interesting question, because people find their purpose in life in many different ways. It's like the reason why I found my purpose and how I got to the monastery was completely different to this fella here. So everybody has their own way. But how do you find it? I don't know, eh? I guess you just read books or interact with people, and then, you know, maybe the penny will drop, and then you just figure it out. This is what I need, and this is what I want to do. Some of us are late bloomers. Some of us mature really young. But we'll get to the point where I think we'll understand what we want to do in life and the purpose that we want to find. But some people just, you know, don't find a purpose at all. But that's life. That's how it is. Not everybody can find a purpose. If you observe the world, that we live in. Everybody's different. Some people just have a hard time. Some people have a good time. And that's just how it is. Okay. Emma from the UK. Sometimes I lose mindfulness and my ethical conduct and can get involved in things such as gossiping. As long as it doesn't, like, we live in monasteries and talking about things is normal, right? It's all right to talk about your friends or people that may sort of nudge you in the wrong way. That's fine. I think that's normal. But I think, like, just being around monasteries long enough, when the speech starts to become, like, divisive and, like, revengeful, then this is when you just got to just bite your tongue and not go into that area, because it creates disharmony within the community. Yeah, you get people going around and just, like, just talking about other people in a bad way. You know, why are they doing that? Is it because they want to sort of, like, put ideas into your head so you don't like this person? Or they're just making up false tales so this person gets disliked? You know, those kind, when you start talking about people in that kind of way, then there's a big no-no. But if you just, like, you know, sometimes you talk, you see somebody, oh, Scotty's like this, he likes to camp, you know. That's gossiping, but it's not bad. You know what I mean, right? So gossiping is okay. Just don't be divisive. Okay. This is like another Dhamma talk, all these questions. You guys still want to hang around? Okay. Anyways. Oops. Deddy from Australia. How can we tell world leaders that the world needs peace? We are sick of all the harsh words used, the finger pointing, the disharmony and mistrust. Yeah. I guess the world is the world, and the world is the world, and just being peaceful, being kind, it's all aspects of the world, basically. You don't get a perfect world, and you don't get like the world is good and bad, I guess. And leaders have to be, sort of be like this. It's kind of like a business. Just making the world tick, the economy, making promises and breaking them, and people voting and all that kind of stuff. But I think, in a sense, it's like I was thinking about earlier, because it doesn't really matter if you think about life the way it is now, with all the different leaders that we've had in Australia, whether we like them or not, over time, you know, it's not a bad place to live in. That's what I kind of say to people when they start talking about politics, because people have their sides and they choose this and that, but I'm not really into that. And you just look at the bigger picture and just see where Australia is today. And we live in a pretty sweet place. There's no wars. I mean, there's crime and all that kind of stuff, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I shouldn't make a joke. I'm not gonna. Okay, next one. Okay, I've been in deep deja vu state, which sometimes is not even deja vu. I literally feels I'm remembering this life. Okay. Can you clarify this concept, please? Deja vu state. It feels like you're remembering this life as if you had this life before. I don't think that's possible, because your life hasn't happened yet until it happens. So maybe talk to Ajahn Brahm about this. I'm not sure. Sometimes we just need a bit of clarity in life. Maybe our mind's a little bit muddled. I'm not sure. I don't know where you're actually coming from. But yeah, it's like with the practice of Buddhism, it helps us develop more clarity of mind. So we can understand what's going on in our heads and sort of become more grounded people. Yeah. I don't really know how to answer that question. My father is very ill, Kelly from the UK. I care for him, but he used to be an alcoholic and abusive. My dad is still abusive and threatening. I find it hard sometimes to be compassionate. Yes, it sounds like you're in a very, very tough situation. Yeah. Sometimes just give yourself some loving kindness. Give yourself just time away from your father. Take a break and just re-energize, rejuvenate, meditate. Just feel better about yourselves and then about yourself. And then when you feel good about yourself, then go and spend time with your dad. You find that if your mind is like a bit brighter, there's more clarity to it, then you can deal with the difficulties of life a lot easier. You're not as sensitive as you would be if you were a little bit down or low energy. So you care for your father, you want to look after him, but at the same time, you have to look after yourself. Yeah, it's always like the middle way in Buddhism. It's not all about giving. It's not all about taking, but it's always just the middle way, looking after people, looking after yourself. Yeah, you know, things like that. So, yes. Done. Okay. Happy?
Hope so.
Okay. Okay, we can bow to the Buddha, and then we can go home. What time is it? It's still early, eh? It's too early. Okay. So I would say it's still early, so you can sit meditation if you want to. Some Buddhist traditions, they will sit up to about 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. But it looks like you guys are heading somewhere else. Oops. All right.